We're here.
I wish I could give this feeling. I wish I could give this feeling.
What up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Corner Podcast. This week's episode of the Corner is brought to you by Casper Mattresses. Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. You know, me and Andreas are always covering events, we're always writing articles, but when we do have time to sleep, we lay our head down on a nice, pillowy, soft, premium mattress from Casper Mattresses. Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and going straight to you. No showrooms, no middleman. Everyone's seen those creepy guys trying to follow you around the department store. None of that anymore. You get your hands on a nice premium mattress by going straight to Casper Mattresses.
Yeah, man. I mean, I got to get my rest. So Casper Mattresses is the goods. I'm telling you right now. So listen, you can get $50 off of any mattress purchase by visiting Casper.com/the corner and entering the promo code the corner. That's one word, the corner. That's Casper.com/the corner, promo code THECORNER. Terms and conditions apply.
What up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Corner Podcast. As always, Kel Dansby here with Andreas Hale. I feel like I caught the plague when I went to Kansas City to drop off my kids. It just happened to be the flu. It's going around. Make sure you guys, you know, sanitize those hands. I was laid up for like 3 days, 4 days with it. I was man down. But now I'm feeling a little bit better. So we'll bring you the podcast. Old man Andres is chilling in the crib, healthy as always. I'm not exactly sure how you stay the epitome of health.
I don't think that's necessarily true. Yeah, well, maybe it is. I'm able to avoid shit. You know, I'm like Mayweather with these with the flu. I dodge that shit.
Granted, when I go to your crib, there is a lot of sanitary stuff around. Hand sanitizer are. Here. You know, you got the lavish soaps in the bathroom. Everything's a top notch at the crib. So that probably lends to it.
That's courtesy of the wife, man. I mean, you know. Plus, I got a daughter, so we sanitize everything. Because the last thing you want is a sick baby. It's the worst.
All bad. So I'm bouncing back. We're here to talk combat sports today. Of course, we're going to recap Wrestle Kingdoms. People, I know you guys want to hear about it. Great card. We're going to talk about Dave Meltzer giving Jericho Omega 5 stars. And what we thought of some of the matches. But that'll come up a little bit later. We're going to go through the news of the hour. Canelo and Triple G all but signed for the rematch on May 5th. I'm not surprised, right? Like, we've been saying this since that fight ended. I'm not sure why this is such big news.
Yeah, it's not that big of a deal. I mean, like, you know, the only thing I was curious about is whether Golden Boy would try to wait, have Triple G wait another few months and then do it on Independence Day?
Yeah,
September again. That was my only concern, and maybe have Billy Joe Saunders give up his belt, either getting his ass whooped by Canelo or Triple G, so they fight for all the belts. That's the only thing I could think of. Aside from that, this was like a big duh. Like, the night it happened, I was like, yo, Cinco de Mayo, rematch, Vegas. They're playing games talking about Madison Square Garden, but ain't nobody taking this fight to Madison Square Garden. Ain't no Mexicans in New York.
Nah, not coming out to support Canelo like that. It'd be a Triple G home fight, and he's not the A side.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. Eric Gomez, in his interview with Lance Pugmire with LA Times, said, "Yeah, MSG is making a big offer." Yo, we've heard this story for years that MSG is making a big offer. It just doesn't happen. Not for these type of fights. It's not going to happen. I don't even know why we're playing these games. We all know it's going to be a T-Mobile in Vegas. I know I'm going to be there. Kel, I know you're going to be there. So let's stop playing. Just everybody book your flight and what have you. We'll see you in Vegas on Cinco de Mayo weekend.
MSG can't even get their own New York fights. They can't take fights from Barclays, let alone from T-Mobile. It's like, come on. Don't stop playing.
They keep trying it, but, you know, I guess this is your due diligence to give MSG a chance to make an offer you can't refuse, yet you still refuse it. I mean, state tax is a killer, man. Nobody wants to fight in New York. Ask Conor. That's why he wants to fight in Vegas now. Forget New York. That state tax is killer.
Yeah, he did the one, okay, let me open up the show in New York, but that's about it. With that fight, do you expect a different result? I'm going into it, and one of the other quotes from the Lance piece was that the trainers feel Canelo has Triple G figured out. They thought the last three rounds showed that Canelo figured out Triple G. This next fight will be easier for Canelo, more decisive. I don't think that's the case at all.
No, I mean, you got to sell a fight, so you got to say that Canelo figured him out. I mean, the fact of the matter is a majority of us ringside thought Triple G won the fight. He controlled the action. Canelo couldn't do anything to keep him off him. He fought a great fight, but he lost. Mm-hmm. Unless Triple G gets old overnight, it's probably going to be the same result. You know, Canelo just said he has to fight smart. He always puts his back on the ropes, which puts him at a disadvantage. And it should be a good fight, but I don't think anything's figured out. I mean, you need to figure out how to hurt him. How about that? Figure that shit out.
He was walking through everything. Nothing hurts him. So we'll see. Maybe someone does get dropped this fight. That could be the difference between the first fight and this fight. Everyone that I talked to the night of the first fight saw Triple G winning. At most, it was a draw. Like, maybe. There was just one judge that didn't. And saw Canelo running away with the fight.
Which is insane.
Insane. So as long as that doesn't happen again, I think we should get a good, fair one. Leave the fans going home happy. The action should be there. Hopefully we get a good undercard as well. And that's pretty much all we could hope for. But it's cool. It's what we thought was going to happen. Single de Mayo weekend. The crowd should be out. It should be a better crowd even than September. I feel like the Mexican crowd turns up even more for that May fight. The weather's better. The pool's just open. It's just big. I know it won't be the Floyd crowd we're kind of used to on Cinco de Mayo, but this is just as big as that. It's the next best thing.
Yeah, I mean, we know what it's going to be. Canelo brings him out. I mean, it's of course, it's a different audience than Floyd, clearly. It's like Freaknik versus Cinco de Mayo. But, yeah, this should be a fun week. The crowd, I mean, this is, you know, for Ring Magazine, I had to write the event of the year, and the event of the year to me was Canelo Triple G. As much Mayweather-McGregor had all the hype, all the energy was at Canelo Triple G. And the fans, the band playing outside as we walked up to the arena, like, there was just so much energy in that fight. And I can only see it getting kicked up a few more notches, because this is probably the most anticipated rematch we've had in quite some time. So, looking forward to it, man. I mean, Tom Loeffler did say that they had to figure out some minor issues, but I figure this thing will get done. I don't know. I'm assuming it's about the pay-per-view split. I have no idea exactly what it is, but they'll get this shit done. There's nowhere else for Triple G to really go to make this kind of money. Plus, he's a little older, too, so he needs this fight, and he needs to get rid of Canelo. So I'm looking forward to it. We got a few months. Yeah, I'm ready.
Yeah, that'll go by in a blink, too. And it's a nice, nice end to this quick run of boxing we're going to have. We have some good matches scheduled throughout the spring, and that's really the highlight right there. So that's dope. That's about it in the boxing world, though. Like, boxing is so, like, okay, we talk about something for 1 week, wait 3 weeks, talk about the next thing. Nothing really huge happening. Everyone else has set up fights. Keith Thurman was running off at the mouth. Adrian Broner has a mixtape. That's about it in boxing.
Yeah, that's why when people have asked, like, why don't we do, like, people have asked me, why don't you do three different podcasts? Because it's just not enough stuff going on in boxing to justify its own podcast. And same with MMA, same with pro wrestling. From week to week, things change. So, boxing, if you guys had a boxing podcast, it would be 9 minutes and 35 seconds this week. So, that's all you would get.
That'd be real. We'd listen track by track to the Adrian Broner mixtape, giving our thoughts. And that'd be the entire podcast. And that'd be grueling. Because I refuse to believe that it's good.
You know, we could talk about one other thing with boxing. Floyd Mayweather acted completely ignorant to the Me Too movement.
Does it surprise you that Floyd Mayweather is completely ignorant to everything?
No. And one, I don't think he's ignorant to it. I just don't think he gives a shit. And Floyd is Floyd is a guy who is so caught up in his own money that he doesn't pay attention to anything. But I'm sure he's heard about this. I mean, shit, it's been going on for several months. I'm sure he's got friends in the industry who have been dealing with this. So, and plus, I mean, given his checkered history, he's aware, but he had to play it as a fool. And I mean, Floyd, look, Floyd is the best boxer, one of the best pound-for-pound boxers of all time. That has nothing to do with the man as a human. Like, he just does. He's not my cup of tea as a human being.
No, I mean, he's as self-centered as you can get. And yeah. It also helped him as a boxer, right? Because he focused on nothing but himself.
Yeah, I mean, the guy, again, he is dedicated to his craft and his business and his women. And that's really where the buck stops. Like, if you're looking for a humanitarian Floyd Mayweather, you came to the wrong place. If you look for anybody who gives a shit about anybody else, you came to the wrong place. If you look for Floyd Mayweather to speak on black issues, you came to the wrong place. If you're looking for Floyd Mayweather to talk about his Me Too movement, like I've got $1 billion, Me Too, then you came to the right place. But if that's your friend, if that's the type of person you want to be, I question your integrity.
Yeah, I really doubt that his friends are the women saying Me Too.
No, absolutely
I'm pretty sure if he knows about the situation, which he says he doesn't, but if he honestly is aware of it, it's because some of his friends are on the opposite end of that equation.
Absolutely. I don't think he knows. First of all, I don't think he has any, like, women friends. When you're that rich, and this is a very broad generalization, but when you're that rich, what's the point of, and you're not married or anything, what's the point of having women friends?
I mean, everybody got to have a few women friends. Like, they tell you the real shit in life. They point out other gold-digging women. Yeah. That is the key to having women friends.
Yeah. I'm just saying, if in Floyd's case, like in our case, of course, yeah, we got a few women friends
Floyd
here.
Floyd needs it more than anyone.
Does he?
He needs that one chick who is objective. Because look at all the women that want to be around him for the money. And he throws it around, trust. But that could have... He could have been Me Too. A girl lying about this, lying about that. You never know what could happen around him. He needs someone to kind of be his eyes. Because like you said, he's blind to a lot of situations.
Yeah,
and he has to have that one girl that's like, yo, you're wildin'. Or she's not the one. Or she's this type of... He needs the investigatory friend. And guys don't do that shit. We got too much time for other stuff. Too much time making our own damn mistakes to investigate someone else's mistakes that they're about to make.
But again, when you're that rich, do you really trust anybody? I don't. I'm just saying. And I'm not a microcosm of what Floyd Mayweather is.
You got to trust somebody.
But it's very hard when people are, like, it's not, if these were your friends when you were like 17 before you made money, cool. But any woman that comes around you when you're that rich, you're probably going to be a little curious about in some way.
Boom. Keisha Cole is his friend. Right?
So, if you say right, so.
By all accounts, they say they're friends.
Whatever. I mean, everybody says they're friends. I'm just saying.
Tiny as a friend. You got to have friends that you're not interested in smashing that can just tell you some real stuff. And it helps when those girls are batshit crazy on their own end because they know how to spot batshit crazy stuff.
We've
all had these friends.
But we are poor compared to Floyd Mayweather.
You'd be surprised. I'm a firm believer that money does not cure stupidity. And men are stupid by nature.
No, money does not cure stupidity.
We do the same shit. He just got a lot more money.
Yeah, but I don't think any woman that's going to be invested in Floyd Mayweather's well-being is probably going to be invested in Floyd Mayweather. Not necessarily just the homie be like, yo, I got some good advice for you, and I'm going to go home to my one-bedroom shack. Like, everybody's got some kind of personal interest in Floyd Mayweather. And maybe that's a shallow way of thinking, but... I don't see Floyd Mayweather keeping women friends. And the type of person that he is, I don't really see Floyd Mayweather keeping women friends around. Probably have something.
He has like nine girlfriends, so I mean.
Yeah, I'm just saying, he probably has a few women that he sees. Like, maybe Keisha Cole, he sees her because she's famous and like, that's my friend. But they don't like hang out like that. If Floyd's hanging out with somebody, if he's investing his time hanging out with somebody, he's probably smashing. Like,
that's a fair point.
Or his family, like his baby mamas. And who knows? You know what I'm saying? Like. But that's probably the closest thing that he has to a friend.
Yeah, they all seem to be around. But that goes back to the point of they knew him before he was Money Mayweather.
Yeah.
So you kind of keep them around. Maybe they're that conscious. But he needs somebody. I'm sure if his baby mama's always around the gym. She pops up. She seems like cool people. I'm sure she pulls him to the side every now and then and be like, yo, you know you're wildin' with this one. Like, really? Bad Medina, my man? Bad Medina? this shit ain't gonna end right.
Yeah, like, that was a bad look.
I'm sure she tells him, he'd be like, okay, whatever. And then shrugs it off. And then she's also there with the, yo, I told you so. So, you know, but she's a baby mama. Yeah. She ain't going nowhere. She could be comfortable. She'd be like, yo, you can't get rid of me. I could talk super spicy to you. So somebody is playing that role in the Mayweather camp. I'm not sure who it is. Somebody is. But they need to now inform him about the Me Too movement.
Yeah, it's too late. Like, these things, when you're Floyd Mayweather and you get interviewed, like, you need, especially now, and you brought up this point, I think it's very important to echo it. It hasn't happened to him yet. Like, he's been dealing, he dealt with the domestic issues, but sexual harassment hasn't happened to him yet. It may be coming. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't hide from it. So for Floyd, you're going to have to be kind of smart about how you handle your business and what you know. Like, Me Too is something that you should know. But he's Floyd, man. He's almost a billionaire. What can we say?
Yeah. I mean, you don't want to get blindsided by that shit, though. Cause that'd be the end. You got to walk away from Mayweather promotion and, resign your post and all this shit.
Oh, he won't. Not him.
I mean, everybody else is walking away.
Yeah, but he won't. He's not that guy. Like, Floyd Mayweather will never say, yeah, I did it. I'm sorry. He won't do that. He'll be like, no. And in some ways, I know it's wrong, but it's like the smart thing to do. Deny, deny, deny until somebody can prove you wrong. And that's exactly what Floyd Mayweather would do. He'd never have a heart and say, oh, man, I really treated you bad. I'm sorry. Who has he ever apologized to?
His children. In interviews every now. You know, that's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, nah. He doesn't. Listen, I'm not going to say he cares about any woman. And having a compound of women, rotating women in a compound, does not seem like the best thing to do when this Me Too movement is going on. I'm sure somewhere down the line he slipped up.
Yeah, he's got enough money to shut people up. But
that's the key. And yeah, we'll see. But he better be aware, like you said, and get everything in line, because life comes at you fast. And he doesn't want to be blindsided by that. Let's go to UFC. Get off of Floyd. Let's talk about someone who's actually fighting. And we're a week away from this fight. Stipe versus Ngannou. But Ngannou's the favorite. Stipe went on MMA Fighting or something this week. The MMA report, I believe. And said that he is being disrespected by the UFC. And that they want Ngannou to win.
He's right.
How crazy. As much as we've talked on this show about them and the treatment of black fighters and not pushing black fighters, and you have arguably the most all-American white champion you can have, and you don't want him to be the face of your company. You don't want to push him. You want to push a black fighter who still has a language barrier over him.
Well, here's the issue, right? The great equalizer for everything is the knockout. And black fighters who knock people out have tended to perform well in this world. Mike Tyson is a perfect example.
Stipe knocks people out.
Yeah, but here's the issue with Stipe. Stipe is not the all-American white guy. He's far from that. First of all, his name is Stipe Miocic.
Okay, fair enough. But he's a firefighter. He's Cleveland. Yeah, you know,
but
the lunch problem, pail type of guy.
The problem with Stipe Miocic is that his personality isn't one that is magnetic. He's very much a guy who is a little bit more talkative, but very similar to Robbie Lawler in how he answers his questions. Like, I don't care. Yeah, I'm not worried about it. Like, he doesn't get fired up or anything. Like, even if you look at the 220 press conference, Ngannou was basically telling Stipe, I'm going to knock you out. And Ngannou was just like, we'll see. You can't really do anything with that if you're the UFC. The ultimate thing is, yeah, they don't push black fighters who play it smart. They're always the villain. Rashad Evans was treated like a villain. Tyron Woodley is treated like a villain. Demetrius Johnson, I don't know what they treat him like, but he is the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world, and they don't give a shit.
They treat him like he's invisible.
Yeah, Francis Ngannou is a big, scary black man who hits people and they fall. That's very easy to market in this society, especially when you look at how much people were in love with Mike Tyson. He doesn't have the same volatile personality, but he knocks people's heads off. So in highlight reels, that's all you want to see is him knocking people out. So he's the favorite, not Chris in the UFC, but a lot of people, including myself, believe that if Ngannou touches Stipe, he's going to sleep. So that makes sense. The UFC has been on the Ngannou train for a minute. When they say the guy hits you with, like, the power of, what, a Ford Focus or some shit like that?
Yeah, some wild card. Like, Dana pulled that shit out of nowhere.
Yeah, when they say that, it's hard to deny that as long as he keeps winning. And he's a star. He may not be a superstar, but in a heavyweight division that's looking for knockouts, spectacular knockouts, Francis Ngannou will be that, could be that guy. But I get it. Like, Stipe feels like he's being disrespected. He's being treated like the B side of this fight. Like, it's a foregone conclusion that Ngannou is going to knock out Miocic. And Miocic is basically beating the shit out of everybody he's touched lately. So I get the level of disrespect. It's just hard to bet against a guy who's just putting everybody to sleep.
Which is Stipe. He's a guy putting everybody to sleep.
Not in the same fashion.
Not in the same fashion, but the exact same results.
Yeah, no, it's true. Like, Stipe is a more polished striker. Stipe is a great wrestler. There's a lot of things that Stipe does extremely well that could benefit him against Ngannou. The problem is that Ngannou, I mean, he just touches people and they go to sleep. It's, you know, he has some technique, but I mean, Alistair Overeem is arguably one of the most decorated strikers in all of combat sports. He has a glass chin, obviously.
Yeah.
But he couldn't deal with Miocic. Like, I mean, he couldn't deal with Ngannou's power, and he couldn't, like, he got touched basically once. Versus, it took Miocic a few times to get him out of there.
Well, he almost got Miocic out of there. Stipe was, like, almost out of there.
So you look at these things and you can kind of see why people are looking at Ngannou as the next big thing in the heavyweight division. The UFC likes to push their chips in early. Like, we've seen this done with Cynthia Calvillo, Paige VanZant, Sage Northcutt. They push their chips in on somebody early. Ngannou feels like a sure thing to them, so they're going to push all their chips in. If Stipe wins, I'd become the biggest villain the UFC's known. Like, fuck y'all. Y'all didn't have my back. I'll fight again, but pay me. Like, I'd be a dick, but we'll see if he's going to be that way.
It might not be in Stipe's character, but that would be great. Yeah, like you said, UFC rolls the dice. Worked on Cody Garbrandt.
They didn't really go all in on Cody Garbrandt. Not like Paige VanZant.
Oh, they pushed him, though. That title shot, he was, what, 7?
Yeah, but, I mean, they did push him. I'm not saying they didn't push him, but, like, Sage Northcutt was, like, on the main card and getting 30-30 in his first fight. Paige VanZant was positioned as the next title contender and a superstar. Cody had to win a few fights, and then it was like, all right, this makes sense. Like, Cody doesn't talk like Conor McGregor. He was just knocking people out. And I feel like with Cody, they kind of pushed their chips in a little bit too late, because Cody should have been on the cover of, like, some magazines and then, like, Maxim interviews or what have you beforehand.
Ink magazine, everything.
Yeah, like, you know, I say the same thing about Rose Namajunas. I've been saying that for years. Like, when you see somebody, it's like, you need to go. But they push their chips in oftentimes on the wrong people. And Ngannou might not be the wrong person, but they are. And they're clearly disrespecting who is arguably one of the greatest heavyweight champions the UFC has had.
He wins this, he's the greatest UFC champion. Heavyweight champion.
Yeah.
It's the longest record. He beats some of the scariest people. I mean, he's the best. I mean, no disrespect to Kane, but Kane
can't stay healthy.
No, he can't stay healthy. The Lesnar fight looks okay at this point. Like, Stipe's resume holds up compared to Kane's.
Look, the fact of the matter is, the heavyweight division, I did some research a while ago, and I can't remember if this still holds true. Before Stipe Miocic, I don't think any heavyweight champion defended the title more than twice.
No, that's the record. He just tied it.
Right. So
two
if
title
you,
defenses. This
three
would be
times,
his third.
It's like, but it just, it's the state of the heavyweight division, man. It's just big guys touching big guys that go to sleep. So, you know, it is what it is. Like, even if Ngannou becomes champion, granted, there's not a whole lot of opponents in the heavyweight division, but somebody can touch him and put him to sleep.
Yeah. Or ground him. What if Kane comes back healthy and just grounds his ass?
Very true.
And takes him deep into deep waters. See what he's about in the fourth and the fifth.
It's a lot, man.
Yeah,
he might
tap him. You never know. It's a wild game. There's a fight card this weekend, though, before we even get to that next week. So we have UFC Fight Night 124. It is in St. Louis. It's cool to see the card in St. Louis. Odd that, you know, this is the card they get when they have a champion from there, but whatever. you know, Woodley gets no props, so it is what it is. Maybe if he holds the belt for a little longer, he'll get to fight in front of a home crowd. This fight, though, is headlined by Jeremy Stephens and Doho Choi, Korean Superboy.
That's going to be a great fight.
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm not... Jeremy Stephens doesn't do it for me. How about that? And I'm picking a Korean Superboy to take his face off. Hey, I don't think Stephens has been stopped, though.
Stephens, he hasn't been stopped.
But this is a long-ass fight, so yeah. I think he gets stopped.
Well, he hasn't been stopped since Eves Edwards stopped him, like, in 2012,
oh,
I want to
no.
say.
No, 2 years ago, got stopped. Dennis Bermudez.
No, he knocked out Bermudez.
Oh, that was a win. Okay, no.
Yeah, yeah. That was a flying knee knockout. No,
no, no. no. Yeah, Eves Edwards, you're right.
Yeah, Eves Edwards is the last guy who stopped him. Jerry Stevens has an excellent chin, and he has dynamite in his hands. The question is, what happened to the Korean Superboy after the Cub Swanson fight? He's been out for a year. He took a brutal beating in that fight, so he may not be the same guy. Or
he's young.
One fight can ruin anybody. I mean, you look at boxers like Bam Rios and the wars that they go into, Mike Alvarado, and you see, like, once you're in a war, sometimes, like, your body may not snap back, no matter how old or young you are. And in this kind of a fight where Jeremy Stephens hits harder, in my opinion, than Cub Swanson, it'll be interesting what happens over the course of five rounds. Remember, Stephens just beat Gilbert Melendez, too, former Strikeforce champion. And so he's a very live underdog here to win this fight. I'm not going to – and, I mean, Korean Superboy, he beat everybody. He knocked out, what, like 10 people in a row before he fought Cub?
Yeah.
But if you look at those 10 people, like, none of those names are jumping out at you. So no. Steve will be a good litmus test to see where Doho Choi is at now.
But this is probably Korean Superboy's last fight for 2 years. Because he has the mandatory – military duty that we saw the Korean Zombie have to take.
Yeah.
And kind of, you know, put him on the shelf for 2 years. So it's odd, but I guess, you know, whatever you got to do for your country. So this fight, and then he comes back, he's 28-29. So you're in a rough spot there. So we'll see. He needs a knockout. You don't want to go out on a loss.
Nah.
Come back to no momentum. Another fight on here, Uriah Hall versus Vitor Belfort. I think they're just going to spend a lot of time looking at each other.
Man,
I wouldn't be surprised if Uriah Hall lost the decision.
This is a bizarre fight because you got two guys who just had a win, right? Belfort beat Nate Marquardt. Uriah Hall beat Christoph Jocko by knockout. Before that, three straight losses for both of them.
He lost to good fighters, but yes.
Both of them did. If you look at it, Musasi, Kelvin Gastelum, Robert Whittaker, like they've all, Jacare, they've all lost to really good fighters, both of them.
True.
However, the physical advantages all are for Uriah Hall. The mental advantage is the thing I'm curious about. Uriah Hall just doesn't know how to pull the trigger. He has every advantage to beat Vitor Belfort in this fight, but will he pull the trigger or is he going to respect the legend that's in front of him? That's the question.
I don't even think it matters who's in front of him. Like at this point, He has to walk into and luck into a knockout. He doesn't go and get the knockout. He just throws some shit and hopes that it lands. And he's such a dynamic striker and so athletic and powerful that he knocks people out when it does land. But he doesn't go and get it. There's no oomph to him. He has to be high on the list of most disappointing talent.
He is, because you watch him. You watch him, and he's a physical specimen. He's fast. He's accurate. But then he just stands there and looks at whoever he's fighting, and he waits for them to do something so he can counter. And it's like, when are you going to go get it? Like you said, when are you going to go get it? Vitor Belfort is there to go get. But I guarantee you Uriah Hall is thinking about what's coming back, and that's going to have him concerned. And like, it's weird because Uriah Hall is like a plus, like, a minus, like, 345. And for Vitor Belfort to win by decision, it was like insane where it was like plus 1,000.
Oh, ridiculous. I'd lay some money on that.
But exactly, because it's all about Uriah Hall's mental state. Is the man going to come to fight or is he going to come to watch? And if he comes to watch, he can lose a split decision.
Yeah.
Like just staring at, I mean, if Vitor is more active, he could lose. Granted, Vitor is not fighting in TRT Brazil, but, you know, he could win this fight.
It's very possible.
It's a weird fight. Like, you feel like this is a loser-must-go fight. It should be a loser.
Vitor said he's retired. by all accounts, there was reports yesterday. Yeah, I mean, this is MMA, right? People retire today, they're back tomorrow. Who knows?
MMA retirement is like rapper retirement, straight up. Like rappers say they retire and like they keep like Too Short, Jay-Z, they've retired, they come right back. Like Lupe, I think he's even tried to retire. They just all come back. So I don't trust it. But yeah, this is a fight that I'm looking at just like it should be the loser must leave town, but they'll be back.
It's like when New York people retire and go to Miami.
Yeah.
This is the MMA equivalent. Like Vitor is going to retire and just go to Bellator. It's not that he's going to stop fighting. It's like, I retired. No, I'm just going to fight in Bellator in a tournament 2 years from now.
Yeah, Scott Coker will pick him up.
Quick and easy. Why? Like, that's what you do. You just retire and go to Bellator. We have Paige VanZant, who we talked about earlier. Paige VanZant versus Jessica Rose Clark, contestant on The Ultimate Fighter, I believe.
This is
125, yep.
Man, this is weird. All right, it's from a betting perspective. I'm speaking about because Paige VanZant came into this fight as the underdog, and I have no fucking clue how she's the underdog in this fight.
I don't understand that either.
Because Jessica Rose Clark is a decent fighter. She's nothing spectacular. She goes through a lot of decisions. She beat Beck Rawlings. So what? Paige VanZant is moving to a weight class where she's more comfortable in. She's great in the clinch. Striking's okay. This is a fight that she should win. For this to be like an even money fight is bizarre. Like, I think Paige VanZant should win this fight pretty handily. It might be tough in some spots. But if she controls the fight with her clinch work and her wrestling, I don't see Paige VanZant losing.
Paige might finish her. Paige has skills. She's just not top four. You know, she struggles against those girls.
No, they just pushed her too quick, right? Like, I mean, that was all it was. Paige VanZant was somebody who needed to be developed. And they put her in there with somebody like Rose Namajunas, who beat the dog shit out of her. And then they put her in there with Michelle Waterson, who just outclassed her. She needs to be brought along a little bit more carefully. She doesn't need to be pushed to the moon as quickly. Like, a lot of people are thinking if she wins this fight, she's going to get an immediate flyweight title shot.
Oh, God. She's not even 24 years old. She turns 24 in March. Slow down.
And you know, I've said this before. Some people may disagree. You can ruin somebody by pushing them too fast because mentally they may not ever be able to recover from those kind of losses. Like if you're some boxers can lose a couple of fights early in their career and come back and be better. Manny Pacquiao, for instance. Other fighters, once you lose, it's like mentally you start having doubt. And Paige has lost a couple times. Not saying this ruined her, but if you keep putting it up in there with top tier competition, you are setting her, I think you're setting her up for failure if she's not ready. So Jessica Rose Clark is the perfect person for her to fight. But bring her along slowly. She doesn't need a title fight next. That doesn't make any sense to me. She hasn't even earned it.
Yeah, no, not at all. Like, she slowed down. She knocked out Beck Rawlings. And that wasn't a close fight. I thought Beck, you know, just had a close fight here. So it's a perfect matchup, perfect opponent. I think Paige is going to come in and show her skills. I wouldn't be surprised to see a stoppage. But yeah, there's now an entire division, an entire cast of The Ultimate Fighter for her to run through. Let her grow. And I've always said it, MMA is not built for 20-year-olds. You become a well-rounded martial artist in your 30s. The prime in this sport is damn near 31 through 36. You hit your stride. The John Jones of the world, the Max Holloways, those are rare. People hit their stride late. Frankie Edgar's still hitting his stride.
Right.
You know, he's not my favorite of fighters, but damn, there's no decline. Frankie's still in his prime. So you look at stuff like that, it's like, man, you do all of these things. She has plenty of time ahead of her. She almost has another decade ahead of her to fight. Don't rush it. And that's what it feels like. Couple more fights just to quickly touch on. Kamaru Usman versus Emil Weber Meek. I like Usman a lot. I think this is a good showcase for him. And this is a guy who should be on pay-per-view cards after this.
And go I kind of disagree. And here's the reason. It's like Kamaru Usman got a big knockout. He looks like a world beater. Like, you look at him, he's like a physical specimen. But if you go back to The Ultimate Fighter and watch him, he's a grinder. He's a wrestler. And that is, like, he's a, again, going back to the betting thing, he's like a minus 680 favorite, which is fucking insane to me. Because we don't know much of anything about Emil Meek, right? He beat Jordan Mean in his debut, UFC debut. To get to the UFC, he knocked out Usman Palhares. But aside from that, we don't know much about him. Usman should be the favorite because if all else fails, he'll wrestle you and beat you. But I'm still concerned about his striking. Like, he's not the greatest, most polished striker. It could come along and he could get better. And I think he should win this fight, but I don't think this guy is, like, I don't think he's there yet. I think a lot of people are putting him, fast-tracking him now. It's a pretty crowded division. It'll be interesting to see. But his wrestling is top-notch. I'm just a little concerned about his striking.
Yeah, and he let his hands go a little bit more that last fight. But like you said, he's a grinder. I think he's a guy. He's a guy who's not young. So he's my age, damn near. I think he's about to turn 30. So it's like, okay, only take your time so much with it. There's only so many DCs in this world. That's the opposite end of the spectrum, right? Where you don't come into the game and start wrecking shop until you're like 33, 34. So I think this is a guy who's talked himself into some good situations. He has a good look. I think, especially in this division, he can really make some noise and get some pretty good opponents moving forward. Darren Elkins versus Michael Johnson. Michael Johnson moving down in weight. I'll take Elkins. This is scary thin for Michael Johnson.
I mean, it's really a trap fight for him because he's moving down to face a guy who's won like five in a row. Michael Johnson has lost two in a row, and it caused, I mean, granted, it was against, you know, Khabib and Justin Gaethje, but, you know, you move down a weight class, and that weight cut, you haven't done it yet, and you're fighting a guy who's surging, could mean trouble, could spell disaster.
Yeah, these fights always worry me. Moving down, don't know how your body's going to react. Same thing we saw with Pettis. He's like, yo, let me move down, let me see how it feels, and he's like, no, this doesn't feel good at all.
Right.
So, I don't like that too much. Thiago Alves versus Zach Cummings is a fight that intrigues me. Jessica Eye is on this card. So, some pretty good fights. I'm not going to watch your fight past prelims, but hopefully Jessica Eye gets a finish and I can catch it on the Fox Sports 1 card when they need filler. That's the card for this weekend. Nice little warm-up card. Nice little appetizer heading into next week where we, of course, get DC defending his title and Stipe defending his in a pretty good card in Boston. So I'm excited for that. That's pretty much MMA for this week. Bellator is going to Bellator, right? Bellator has a fight next week too. Rory McDonald going for the title. We'll talk about that more next week. That's going to be exciting. And MMA, that's pretty much it. I don't think any other big news. Conor's been posturing and talking shit on Twitter. Khabib's been talking shit. They say an announcement is coming soon for Khabib. I expect Tony Ferguson and not McGregor, right?
Maybe. I know Tony had surgery, though, or he was sidelined with an injury. So, I still don't, like, we know that the main event for the March card in Vegas is now Frankie Edgar versus Max Holloway.
You would think that's the main event.
Well, it's not going to be Demetrius Johnson because he just had surgery. So, DJ and TJ is out.
No, but it could be Khabib, Tony Ferguson.
Could be.
Tony just cleared up some minor shit in his elbow, I believe.
Could be. We'll see if he's able to train and fight, great. I hope that fight happens. It's here in Vegas again. Perfect recipe for disaster for Khabib to miss weight the day before the fight again. But, hey, let's see if it happens. I don't know what the announcement's going to be, but I'm pretty sure it's not going to be Conor McGregor. You're right. We'll see. We'll see. The lightweight divisions, it's a mess right now with Conor having a belt, Tony having a belt. Both of them kind of sidelined. One sidelined with his injury. The other one sidelined by choice. So I really don't know where this thing is going here.
Is that how we're billing it now? Just sidelined by choice?
Yeah. Like, you know, it's a DNP coach's decision. So it's DNP Connor's decision. Did not play Connor's decision. He is off the card. I don't think he's fighting in March. We'll see him in summer.
Yeah. I mean, I'm circling, you know, obviously – Fight Week, July 7th, 2018 is in T-Mobile. UFC 229 is scheduled for T-Mobile tentatively October 6th. It could be a second Conor fight, then the end of the year card. So, got a nice amount of fights out here this year for Conor to pop up. UFC 223 is in the Barclays, April 7th. that'd be a nice spot for Khabib too, because I feel like the Russian crowd can get out to that one.
Absolutely.
And that would be pretty dope, a New York card. And I wouldn't mind going to that. I got to keep my eye on that card. That would be pretty cool. All right. Now, as we built in the beginning of this show, Wrestle Kingdom time. And we all got together and watched it. Dope card. Lived up to what we wanted front to back. I can't really peg a bad match on this card. And we sat there and watched it for 6 hours.
There wasn't a bad match, but there was definitely an underwhelming match. And that was the Jay White Tanahashi match.
Which ended up getting 4.5 stars by Meltzer.
No, it didn't. It got 3.75.
Oh, that was the 3.7. Which way had the four? The four-way had 4.5?
For the four-way had 4.75. Goto and Suzuki, which was excellent, was a 4.5. Okada and Naito was a 4.5. Ibushi and Cody was a 4.25. I actually went back and watched that match because I remember I was running around doing some other shit in the house. That's like Cody's best match. Like, that was a really good match with Ibushi. Tanahashi and Jay White wasn't good. The Gauntlet match was what it was. There wasn't like a piss poor match on the card in WWE. Wrestle Kingdom was what WrestleMania should be. Great matchups, a big marquee match, and then you have your big title match, and you have a bunch of great matches to surround it with. It delivered. I know a lot of people. There's people that have started calling me a New Japan Mark or an Indies Mark. Man,
you're not Meltzer yet. Not yet.
Nah, man, but I mean, the fact of the matter is New Japan, it's my style of wrestling. It's stuff that I like. I like the indie scene. Ring of Honor, I liked it a lot a couple of years ago. It hasn't been as good lately, but I still have faith in the product. WWE is the only one that always concerns me. And even though, like, they had a
good. And you still like NXT?
Yeah, I can still like NXT. I mean, don't get me wrong. I watch WWE every week, guys. Like, I don't miss the show. Like, I'm a mark. I like the shit. But WWE just has some flaws. Like, we have a hate-love relationship. I hate to love it sometimes, but that's who I am. But anyway, yeah, Wrestle Kingdom was a phenomenal card. I don't even know how you want to jump into this.
We'll just go down real quick. New Japan Rumble, it was funny. It was, just a quick little intro to the night. And I thought my man Cheeseburger was going to win it. But he did not. Masahito Kakihara.
Yes, Kakihara had cancer and came back. There's a little backstory there. So his win was a big surprise. His appearance was a big surprise. So Kakihara winning was the feel-good moment of the day.
He deserved it. He came in last.
Yeah.
Didn't have to outlast anyone. But my boy Cheeseburger.
Cheeseburger's so over.
He got the craziest pop. So Cheeseburger. And then we get into the real matches. Young Bucks versus Roppongi 3K, Show and Yo. I was surprised to see the Young Bucks win it. But one hell of a match. Had great spots. And it was more than just even a spot fest. It was more than just a flippy shit. It had some really good wrestling moments. Some good tag team moments. And they built a story with the back injury and all of that stuff. The Young Bucks showed that, you know what, we're just not here to kind of do drop kick spots and quote-unquote ruin wrestling. Like, they have psychology when they want to.
Well, I mean, if you're a Young Bucks fan, if you're a true Young Bucks fan, you watch them. They know where to serve their audience. They know in New Japan there's a story to be told. There's ring psychology here. That's what happens in New Japan. When they wrestle in PWG or ROH, they're here for the high spots and the spot fest. They know in the comedy stuff. They know how to serve their audience. And people who are critical of the Young Bucks and call them spot monkeys need to watch this particular match because they're terribly wrong. Because this was great. I mean, Matt, I believe, is the one who hurt his back. And it was done so well that a lot of people were like, is he really hurt? Because he was really laboring, going through those moves. And the story played out well. Yeah, I'm also surprised the Young Bucks won. But it does set up something for Roppongi 3K to chase for, to chase the Young Bucks as a champion. So I'm interested to see where this feud goes. But, yeah, the match was excellent.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. Set the night off right. Then we had the Gauntlet match, which was okay. I'd probably say my least favorite match of the night. Yeah, that's fair. In which Chaos won it. which is cool. Beretta, Ishii, Yano. I thought Bullet Club should probably take it. I knew Elgin and War Machine weren't because of the rumors with War Machine leaving for NXT. But even then, it just felt like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing is, you know, Trent Beretta wins it for Chaos, and then they drop it the next night in New Year's Dash to who? Bullet Club. So they gave the title right back. But yeah, it was what it was. I mean, it sucks. It's when you have too much talent, when you have guys like Ishii and you have Zack Sabre Jr. and they get kind of crammed into this type of a match. Because New Japan doesn't do like ladder matches, or they're not really big on multi-man matches. So you get these tag team matches and some of your favorite talent may not be able to perform. So it was what it was. We dealt with it. It's over now. We can move on.
Then we had Ibushi versus Cody. I thought it was an okay match. I can't say Cody was bad. Too much Brandy Rhodes, I would say, was my knock on it. Too many interference spots. It worked like a WWE match more than a New Japan-style match.
Watching it the second time, I appreciated that stuff.
Shenanigans?
Yeah, like I appreciate the shenanigans because that's kind of Cody Rhodes now. Cody Rhodes is shenanigans. So to have Brandy get involved is great. I mean, probably one of the nastiest spots of the entire night was Cody giving Ibushi the crossroads from the apron to the floor, which was an excellent spot. But I mean, as a whole, Kota Ibushi looked excellent as we expected, but Cody didn't look bad in this match. You know, he sold well. It was a great pace. The shenanigans were early. I mean, the hoodwinking in with the Brandy injury, I thought was great. This was a good match.
It was a WWE style match.
Yeah, but it was good.
It was like a WWE style match.
WWE is not going to do a crossroads apron to the floor.
No.
A little bit too dangerous.
Yeah, the spots were good. Stiff strikes still during it too, but the book, the pacing. And the storyline, the plot, how everything played out, it was very WWE style.
Yeah, I'm not mad at it. I enjoyed it.
The problem is, which is true, it could be enjoyable on a card like this, because it was the only match of its kind on the card. The WWE does that shit, like, what, 5 out of 6 matches have shenanigans and false endings? That's when it gets bad.
Well, and that's like the brilliance of New Japan, of Wrestle Kingdom. Every match on this card was distinctly different. None of the matches here, the one-on-one matches, none of them were the same. They all had distinctly different approaches to how the match played out.
Yep. Next, we have LIJ, Evil Sonata, versus Killer Elite Squad. This was okay. Could have been shorter. This. 14 minutes isn't bad. Listen, if everything damn near got, this is the shortest match of the night, so what am I supposed to say? But it wasn't bad at all. Davey Boy Smith is a big ass dude. I didn't know he was that big of a man. Archer is okay. Archer is definitely the Jannetty of those two. But all in all, it's a decent match.
Well, what I liked about this match was the fact that Killer Elite Squad didn't look like, it wasn't like a real match. Like, Killer Elite Squad kind of just beat the shit out of Evil and Sonata for, like, maybe 10 minutes of that match before Evil and Sonata got the win. So it keeps Killer Elite Squad strong because the heavyweight tag team division in New Japan is probably their weakest. So, and there's not a lot of teams there. But so you keep Killer Elite Squad strong. And they lost. So it's almost like the Authors of Pain losing when they beat the shit out of somebody. I didn't mind it. It wasn't my favorite match, but I thought it was good. I thought it told a good story.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. It was a solid match. It was usually, you know, it's that constant build we talk about, but this one was kind of the plateau. It was like, okay, let me just take a quick break and then boom, let's ramp it up again. And we kind of had like two of those matches this night. They weren't drop-offs by any means, but it was kind of like, okay, we're going up. Hold on, just keep the same level and then keep going up again. It's one of those matches. So it was okay. I didn't mind it. People say they're tired of Gorillas of Destiny in these heavyweight feuds. I was kind of like, Gorillas of Destiny probably could have been a good matchup in this. But we'll see it probably later in the summer. They're always in the title picture, some way or some form. So, you know, once that three-way title is dropped by Bullet Club, then they get back in the heavyweight title. Tag team titles, they'll be fine. Next up, we have Goto versus Suzuki.
Yeah, I love this match.
Yeah, the hair match was dope. They told a story. Talking about telling a story, they told a story.
You know what was kind of crazy about this match, though? And I think a few people mentioned it on my timeline. The incompetence of New Japan referees. It is an issue. Because Suzuki...
Red Shoes can't do everything, man. Red Shoes can't do everything.
I'm just saying, like, Suzuki choked Goto unconscious in, like, the first 3 minutes of the match. That should have been the end of the match. Like, for all intents and purposes, that should have been the end of the match. He was knocked out. He needed help getting up. Like, that should have been the end of the match. Like, even in WWE, if somebody gets choked out and cannot get up because it's not a last man standing match, it's over. So when Suzuki choked Goto, should have been over. But, alas, the match went on. These guys beat the shit out of each other. Goto, you know, Suzuki no-selling some of those chops. I mean, it was a hard-hitting match. Yo, Minoru Suzuki is just, he's a sight to behold, man. He's a legend. And he just keeps having great matches.
Goto got the little rat tail joint.
Yeah, Goto getting the win surprised me. I thought Goto would get the you know the new look makeover, but that didn't happen. Suzuki just shaved it bald. I guess he was tired of that shit.
Shaved it his damn self, too. Went out like a G.
That was pretty gang. Like, I can't front. The way they handled it, because usually the guy who loses a hair match usually runs and he doesn't want to get his hair cut. Suzuki, he just didn't play that shit. He was like, yo, he left and he came back, was like, you know what? I'm a man of my word. Take this. He like slammed the hair on the chair and was like, peace, motherfucker. Oh, yeah.
He brought his own chair into the ring. He said, fuck your chair. I'm bringing my own chair, setting it up. Give me those clippers.
Yeah, that in itself. Again, it's a way that, like, heels, the lines are so blurred between baby faces and heels. So every heel doesn't have to be a chicken shit. Some do. That's their role. Some of them can be. But guys like Suzuki, if he's a heel, he doesn't have to be a chicken shit heel. He can still be a gangster.
Just badass heel. Then we have the four-way match, which was my favorite of the night. I'm not going to say it's the best match of the night. It was my favorite, though. Will Ospreay versus Marty Scurll versus Takahashi versus Kushida. I could have watched this for 30 minutes. It was only 21.
This was a great match, man. I mean, it was, again, another match that was different from the rest. And Ospreay winning, calling back to, you know, I forgot he had the title before, him losing the Scurll and... You know, he got the ace cutter on him. And I mean, a lot of callbacks happened in this match from previous matches between these four wrestlers. And we had, I swore that there was a great near fall. I swore Takahashi was winning when he was just running people over towards the end of the match. But this was just an excellent match. The junior heavyweight division in New Japan is excellent.
It's always strong, though.
Yeah.
Battle of Super Juniors is going to be legit.
It's pretty much legit every year. It kind of flies under the radar because G1 is not too far away, but it's just really good talent. And you look at these guys, Kushida, Takahashi, Ospreay, and Skrull, and it's like the future is bright for New Japan and these guys are just excellent talent.
When Neville comes back, is he in Battle of Super Juniors or is he in G1? If you had to put him in one.
Super Juniors.
I would say the same.
I put him right in there with Will Ospreay and let these motherfuckers go ham on each other.
It'd be crazy. I don't think he gets out of his contract by then, but that'd be one hell of a thing to see. Next up is that next little like plateau moment, which is Tanahashi, Jay White.
Yeah.
I like the Jay White character. I think they're going in a good direction. These two, just the chemistry wasn't there.
Yeah, this was, I mean, you know, a lot of people were pissed that Jay White didn't win because he got, you know, the montage before and the build-up to his debut, but Tanahashi's still Tanahashi. I think it makes sense for Tanahashi to win, but the match just wasn't good. And it just, I don't know if it was a clash of styles, and it wasn't bad, it just was underwhelming because you know Tanahashi puts on great matches, and I'm not even going to blame Jay White. It just, these two just didn't mesh well in the ring. There were a lot of lulls in this match. The finish was kind of sudden. It just, I mean, it was great that, and hopefully this reboots Jay White a little bit, with on New Year's Dash, him being recruited to the Bullet Club, and then he turned it down. Now he's ended up with Chaos, and even told Okada, he was like, shit, I'm just joining the game, but I'm coming for that title. That Jay White character makes sense. Like, the guy who just doesn't give a shit, he'll align and stab you in the back. And that makes sense, but this match with Tanahashi to be on this big of a stage, it probably should have been early on the card, but it is what it is. It wasn't great.
Nah, it could have been better. Jay White will grow into it. Tanahashi does have a history of always getting better against the same opponent. So, I mean, each one of Okada matches got better and better and better and better. Same thing, you go back as far, however long you want, versus Nakamura. You throw whatever opponent in there that you want. He learns. He gets that chemistry. He builds a storyline. So maybe this isn't the last time we see these two guys. We'll definitely see him in G1.
Yeah.
So definitely. That match will be much better than this match. I have no doubt about it. Next up, Omega versus Jericho. 5-star match for Jericho. If this shit happens in WWE, it's 4.5. And it's a great match. And I love the match. But yeah. Meltzer, come on. Like, he did nothing to squash the fanboy New Japan-isms that everyone put on him. And that's just a fact. He has to give something every year a 5-star rating at Wrestle Kingdom. He's just at that point.
I mean, this wasn't... So here's my argument. Like, this was an excellent match. I thought Jericho and Kenny Omega put on a hell of a show. I think Jericho turned in one of the best performances we've ever seen out of him. He turned the heel up to full volume. He was a dick. He brought back the Lion Tamer with the Walls of Jericho. He busted out the Code Breaker. It hit all the right notes, and it was a really, really good match. But if Tyler Bate and Pete Dunne wasn't a 5-star match, then this is not a 5-star match. No.
If Dream versus Aleister Black wasn't a 5-star match.
Well, that wasn't a 5-star match anyway.
It was equal to this.
Nah, I don't think so. And I really enjoyed that match. Don't get me wrong. I've really enjoyed Aleister Black and Velveteen Dream. But no, I don't think it was better or as good as this. I just thought it was a really good match. And I think part of the reason why that match was so good is because we didn't expect it to be that good. We didn't come into Velveteen Dream and Aleister Black saying, this is going to be a great match. We were like, this should be good. And then it exceeded expectations. This had high expectations by a lot of people. I didn't have tremendously high because I was worried about Jericho's work rate. But the no DQ stipulation, it all kind of, everything worked out. And the one-way angel on the chair, I mean, you had blood. You had everything, all the elements that I'm not, like, terribly upset with the 5-star rating. But when you put it next to some of the matches that didn't get 5 stars, and namely Tyler Bate and Pete Dunne, because that was a phenomenal match, I can see where the critique comes that Dave Meltzer is a New Japan fanboy. I get it. I see that. But doesn't take anything away from the match. This match was absolutely excellent.
Yeah. All right. My Meltzer rant is done. So Meltzer giving a 5.0. That's his scale. I enjoyed the match. We were glued to our seats, looking at it the whole time. It felt like the main event of the night.
Yeah.
And it was billed as such, as far as like the hype around it, surrounding it, and the story. They both delivered. And what can I say? Those guys showed out. It was the best Jericho match since the Shawn Michaels match, which was probably better. And that's not 5.0. But that's one hell of a job by Jericho. He puts on one of these matches now, what, he's 3 decades deep in putting on this caliber of match, which is saying something. You shouldn't be this good for this long. And, you know, those top 5 conversations came through again. Is Jericho top 5? Is he top 10 as far as workers are concerned?
No, but he's really good. I mean, dude, it's just Jericho is great, right? Jericho's a really, really, really great talent. But then it depends on how you're grading your top 5, because if it's pure wrestling, that's one thing. If it's impact, it's another thing. Because then you have your Austins and your Rocks and your Savages. That's a very elite list of guys in the top 5. Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, that's tough. But he's definitely in the conversation. It's not like he's out of the conversation. But he's done it for so long. But the interesting thing about Jericho, in my opinion, is that he has spots where he's not very good. And he's not bad, but he's very average. And he's done it in WWE, but what he does better than anybody else is he reinvents himself and makes himself interesting again. Like, listen, my biggest qualm with Jericho, and I'm not even blaming Jericho for this, was the feud with CM Punk should have been so much better than what it was.
On the mic, it delivered.
Nah, it didn't. It didn't. It was okay. Like, it was, like, those two are arguably two of your best talkers in WWE. And that match, Jericho come back and trolling the crowd, that was cool, but then it just kind of, I don't think, it didn't, like, the match itself didn't really deliver. It was good, but it had high expectations and didn't deliver. Jericho tends to do that from time to time. The match with Kevin Owens could have been better than what it was. It happens to everybody, but Jericho's definitely one of the best talents. He's done it for a very long time. I mean, let's be honest. His WCW days, he was not elite talent there. He was fun when he was the man of 1,001 holds, but he wasn't like elite cruiserweight. Eddie Guerrero, Dean Malenko were all better than him. Mysterio, the Luchadors.
Yeah, he was good. I can't say he was better than them yet, no. He was not better than Ray and Eddie.
It wasn't until he showed up in WWE that he really went through the roof. His, cutting that promo with The Rock is where he really became something. But I remember the night that he beat Austin and Rock and became the Undisputed Champion. I wasn't too happy. I wasn't. And it was just, come on. Let's also remember. And again, may not be totally Jericho's fault, but after Rock and Hogan at that WrestleMania in Toronto, the main event was Triple H and Chris Jericho, and nobody gave a shit. Because Rock and Hogan tore the house down.
Yeah.
So Jericho, yeah, is he elite? Absolutely. Is he top five? No. Is he top 10? Probably not. But he's close. He's really
outside
good.
Outside the top 10. Yeah, that's rough. But, I mean, there's a lot, like I said, there's a lot of people, so I can't knock it. I mean, you go back a long way, so... He's definitely showing that longevity means something, though.
Yeah.
You're pulling matches like this out. And once again, when he gets to be full heel, it's a whole different world. And he had calendar to calendar, last January to this January, he probably had the best year out of anyone. Like, Wrestle Kingdom, the list of Jericho, the friendship joint with Owens, now this whole build, that... Character-wise, incredible what he's done.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, absolutely. The list of Jericho, drink it in, man. Like, Jericho has done, he's had a phenomenal year. And he got to Wrestle Kingdom. Now he attacked Naito at New Year's Dash. So now we're going to get a Jericho Naito. He's not done with New Japan yet. Like, this may be one of the most fun Chris Jerichos that we've had.
Yeah, he just needs to bring the full-length tights back. I'm tired of the briefs. Like... Go back to the tights, man. He's growing out the hair. Just go back to the tights.
That's the least of my concerns. But ultimately, and then on top of all of this, it is a testament to how good Kenny Omega is. Kenny Omega's really fucking good, guys.
Yes.
Look. Yes, my article on Bleacher Report and CNN about Kenny Omega being the best sports entertainer. There are people arguing with me that Roman Reigns is better than Kenny Omega. I don't know what the fuck you're watching.
Fuck out of here. There's in no way, shape, or form is Roman Reigns better than anything in professional wrestling than Kenny Omega.
No, I mean...
On the mic, in-ring, I don't care which... Merch, you put anything on the table and Omega's better.
Like, Kenny Omega is... There's nobody that delivers knee strikes like Kenny Omega. And that used to be Nakamura's thing. But those V-trigger knees are serious. And it looks like he beats the shit out of you. Like, he lays into you. So... He's innovative. He's fun. The thing about Kenny Omega is he's not like a submission wrestler. He's not really a grappler. But the energy that he puts into his matches, I mean, the dude is just, he's very innovative. He's very good. I don't know where he'll land when his career is over. I don't know if he'll ever end up in WWE. I don't even know if they'll ever do the right thing with him if he ever came to WWE. But the guy's just a sight to behold. Even watching him back in the PWG days, like if you weren't watching Kenny Omega in PWG using the chainsaw, or if you didn't watch him at Bola with ACH when they both busted out the Rock and Steve Austin impression, like, you have not truly seen the most fun parts of Kenny Omega. This guy is a great talent.
Yeah, and I like that he's gone more serious in the ring, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because he was very comedic before. Now he's kind of tied it all together, so that's great. Main event, Okada versus Naito. It was good. Their best match together. 36 okay. minutes worth. I'm not sure they needed that much, but it's Okada, right? So that's how long he goes. Still, man, you look at what Omega and Jericho did right before them. I didn't feel low. I didn't feel disappointed that these guys went after them. Was it as good of a match? No. But I still felt like it was big time. And I thought it was Naito's time to go over. In storyline, I thought Naito was ready to carry the strap. And Okada is John Cena at this point. He's Super Cena. I'm not sure when he loses.
And I think that's kind of become the brilliance of Okada's run. In some ways, like when Cena was the champ, you got frustrated because Cena would just come back from anything, right? He was just like, you beat the shit out of him and he comes back and he wins. Okada's just proven that he's the better wrestler. And what the best part of Okada's storyline is that when people have the opportunity to beat him, they fuck up. And I think that was the best part of this was Naito. He was to go for the second Destino was what fucked him up. Like, and it was a lot of Naito. I was reading about the, I went back and I watched their first match at Wrestle Kingdom when he was still like Starboy. And there was a lot of callbacks to that match because he was like, Naito was determined to hit that Phoenix Splash. Like, he was determined to hit it.
Yeah, he was.
So there's storytelling here. Like, he's still sour about Wrestle Kingdom 9 or 8, whichever one that was, where him and Okada fought. And it was just, it was great storytelling. But if you make a mistake, Okada's going to make you pay. And Naito made a critical mistake by being overzealous, and it was made to pay. So now I think whoever beats Okada is going to be a huge deal. Because now we truly don't know who's going to beat this man.
Omega, maybe?
Omega could be the guy. But when does it happen? Like, we don't know. And I think that's been the best because it's very rare in WWE that the best talent holds the title. Right now it's happening with AJ Styles. But AJ Styles should have a run as long as Okada. He won't.
He's at 500 and some odd days.
Yeah. Like,
that's not happening.
He won't have that kind of a run. But the best, it's very rare. But Okada's, like, arguably, between him and Omega, and a lot of people would argue Okada was better, the best man has the title right now. So even if Naito was to win, it's like, well, Okada still might be the better wrestler. So when he loses, it'll be interesting to see how it happens. I'm intrigued. I'm not mad that Naito won. I'm surprised he lost, but then I go, you know what? I just trust Gato and I trust their storytelling in New Japan. They haven't really failed me with their storytelling.
No. Only way it goes wrong is if Jericho's the one to beat him for the belt.
Yeah, they won't do that. I don't think they'll let some part-timer come in and get the title.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But if it happens, and if Jericho wins the belt, somebody's going to take it off of him, you know?
Yeah.
So, right away.
New Japan doesn't do, like, flipping the title. They don't flip the title like WWE does, which is really frustrating. That's always been my issue with, like, the UFC as well. When titles change hands too much, it's hard to develop your star. Because you can't tell somebody from month to month who the champion is. Yeah. Like, in New Japan, you, like, Kazuchika Okada. He's been the champion for, like, almost 2 years. But in WWE, it's like, well, who's the champ? Like, who's the champ in NXT? They had 5 pay-per-views in NXT last year, 4 title changes. Like, there's really nothing to winning the title now. And I've had an issue with that. Like,
yeah,
I think
Finn had it, what, for a year? Knock had it for a year?
Right.
And it felt special.
And now it doesn't feel special anymore. Like, we're just kind of waiting for Cien Almas to drop the title. Nobody thinks he's going to have a long title run. It'd be great if he did. Bring prestige back to that title, but I think you have to have champions who hold the title for a long time. Like, I think
Adam Cole will be the next one to have a year-long run whenever he gets his hand on it.
I hope so. I mean, we'll see how it plays out, but I think, like, AJ Styles, and we'll go back to WrestleMania, but AJ Styles should carry this title through WrestleMania. It always changes hands at WrestleMania. This is the one time that I think the Bucks should stop, and AJ Styles should hold that title until the next WrestleMania. Like, I'd like to see it, because he's the best performer.
If he goes against Nakamura at WrestleMania, it's going to be hard not to have Nak go over him.
Well, I don't know if Nak's facing him at WrestleMania, because I don't necessarily think that they're giving him that push.
Yeah, that'd be on SmackDown, once again, We're not going to dive too far into WWE. We'll save that for next week and preview the entire Royal Rumble card. But SmackDown, Knock did the too sweet to the belt. And, they paired him together, but he made the subtle hint, like, hey, I'm still coming for that.
Yeah, it makes sense. But again, the problem with WWE storytelling is Knock hasn't heated up yet. They need to start pushing Knock. And maybe it starts at the Royal Rumble. Maybe you're right. Maybe Knock wins the Royal Rumble and goes on this toured run. But it's like guys like Naito who go on toured runs through G1. And G1 is like a great thing to do because it really sets up your next title challenger. And it makes them look strong because they had to run through the best of the best.
It's what, like, King of the Ring once was, which is I don't understand why they don't bring that shit back.
Well, because it didn't mean anything. That's the problem with King of the Ring. You win King of the Ring, there was really no reward. You carry the crown and look like a fucking idiot. But other than that, there was no reward to win King of the Ring.
You give it like a stipulation now. Like you give it like I guess you have a briefcase, but that's a spot match. You don't look strong. When you run through a tournament, you look strong. So if you can give them something like, why not a title shot at the Rumble? Why isn't King of the Ring in September and then you build towards the Rumble or Survivor Series for that title shot?
See, that makes sense. Like, even things like the Mae Young Classic or the Cruiser, like all those things, like to have a tournament and the winner of said tournament, they don't get the immediate title shot, but they get to build their profile while they wait to get their title shot at the Royal Rumble. Right? So it's like, with Nakamura, like, sure, he can win the Royal Rumble, but there's, like, 2 months until Mania. So what is he really going to do? And there's, what, one pay-per-view in between?
That's
what is he really going to do? What's he going to do to establish it and make it believable? Like, granted, you know, people like us will go, well, shit, Nakamura's really, he's really good. So him and AJ, if he beat AJ, not a big shocker. But other people look at Nakamura, it's like, dude, he was just losing
just
gender.
Just lost to
Yeah.
Like, just lost to gender.
And he's over here tag teaming with Randy Orton. Like, how is he the biggest threat? That's like what Braun Strowman is right now, where the WWE is certain to drop the ball, is that Braun Strowman is the biggest threat to Brock Lesnar.
Yeah. And he's not going to beat him.
Right. And Roman, and they're creating this thing. Like, I get what they're doing. They're trying to make this Roman Reigns Brock Lesnar thing. But the fact of the matter is, Braun Strowman is your guy. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how you're missing this. He's your guy. The guy moves furniture, the guy destroys people.
Like, he uses a grappling hook.
Yeah. Like, And we'll go back to Russell King in a second, but it gives you a different look because AJ Styles is going to wrestle an AJ Styles match at WrestleMania. So Braun Strowman versus Roman Reigns, which they've done to death, so that shouldn't happen. I don't know who he wrestles, but you get a brutal match with Braun Strowman, it gives you a different look. If Samoa Joe was the guy, for instance, Samoa Joe, Braun Strowman, if they push them both as these monstrous savages, it gives you a different look.
Yeah,
Brock,
I wouldn't mind Strowman Lesnar again without Kane. Strowman Lesnar falls count anywhere, like no DQ. Just see them both, just big ass guys wrecking shit.
The problem was they just shouldn't have done it. They pulled the trigger on Lesnar Strowman too soon, and they let Lesnar beat Strowman with 1-5. That's problematic.
Yeah,
you know, but it's storytelling, man. And the WWE, I'll give them an out. Because it's true, WWE does weekly television, so it's a lot to try to stretch these storylines out with 3 hours Raw, 2 hours SmackDown, a pay-per-view a month. That's a lot. New Japan, they don't have as many shows, right? So they have a little bit more time to build these stories. Like, you still got kids watching WWE, so I get it, but fuck it, whatever.
And, we were talking about New Japan, and Okada and Naito, like I said, thought Naito would go over. Okada's champion. So we'll see what builds off of that. Great storylines going forward for New Japan. The WWE still trying to find their footing heading into Royal Rumble. 2 weeks away, and I feel like a lot is still undecided.
Yeah, you know, I actually enjoyed Raw this week. I liked Matt Hardy's music. I'm actually entertained by the Jason Jordan impending heel turn.
The teases, the teases coming soon. It's just, so we get Jordan Rollins?
I have no idea what they're going to do with him after he turns. But
Roman's going to split, right? So Roman's going towards Lesnar. I guess Rollins needs something.
Unless he's like in a multi-man match. There's a lot of talent to put into WrestleMania. But It's still fun to watch. Balor and the Balor Club sounds good in theory, but I'm a little concerned because how long does this last? I don't want to see them lose. Like, I don't want to see them lose to anybody, just some regular schmegular
people. It's the most comfortable I've seen Finn.
He's happy. He's with his buddy.
So happy. And he's joking, and they're all playing off each other. He opened Raw. He took the mic. He was confident. He's making the jokes. They headlined Raw after. This is where he belongs. But he needed that.
Yeah, I mean, he needed that kind of comfort. And plus, because he's not involved with shit right now, and that's kind of the WWE's fault, he's kind of on the wrong show, ultimately. He really should be on SmackDown. Oh, but, yeah. You know, because he's there and they have nothing to do with him, they are kind of allowing him to do this thing with the Balor Club. And hopefully, kind of like when AJ Styles came, or kind of like when some of these other guys take these little spots and we see how they do, hopefully they see this as a sign for something bigger for Finn.
Yeah, hopefully it's like the New Day, where they're like, right. Well, we're not exactly sure what to do with you guys, so you guys have this idea? Sure. Throw them together. Right. And then now we see it, and the Balor Club will pick up steam. As long as they sell the merch, and people, their interest is high on social media and everything else, they're not going to break them up.
Yeah, so I thought Raw was fun. SmackDown is incredibly frustrating from time to time, but
because it's so good sometimes, and then it's so bad other times.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's like you're trying to service the Shane McMahon, Daniel Bryan story, and at a certain point, it becomes too much. It's like, God damn, every fucking segment, like every like referees, and it's like, I don't know what you guys are doing anymore. The U.S. title picture, I'm really like, I have no idea what they're doing.
Mojo Rawley for U.S. champion.
Yo, his finish is terrible. But they're going to fix that. But, like, Dolph Ziggler, I fully expect Dolph Ziggler to come back and say, I didn't give up that belt. I don't know what you guys are doing.
But it has to be Bobby Roode in the final. Ziggler has to come and, like, cause Roode or something.
I don't want to see Dolph Ziggler and Bobby Roode again. I really don't.
No. Ziggler's not going to wrestle. Ziggler's going to pop up on him.
I don't want to see another feud between Ziggler and Bobby Roode.
Oh, a general feud. Yeah, what I want to see...
What I'd like to see is Bobby Roode turn heel. I'm sick of this babyface shit. But I don't know what we're getting. I don't think Jinder... Well, maybe Jinder does become the U.S. champion. I mean,
foreign guys as a U.S. champion usually works. I like it.
Yeah. I mean, it should be Rusev. Like, Rusev Day is so over.
It is. the dumbest gimmick ever.
It is, but...
In English, you're like, what?
I mean, dating back to when we started this, dude, I've been singing Rusev's praises for years. The guy is just really good. He's just really good. Give him that, and he made his own push. Like, he's a perfect example of what Finn Balor is doing right now. They had nothing to do with Rusev, and Rusev created Rusev Day, tag team with Aiden English out of all the people, and now they're just really fun to watch. Like, Rusev, this is the most fun we've seen Rusev since his undefeated streak.
Yeah. And we'll see. Like, hopefully, their tag team division is just still so thin that they have to kind of keep them in the tag team mix. But it seems like Bludgeon Brothers will come in, you move AOP up, something like that. And then you can move Rusev back to normal ass Rusev. And I wouldn't mind seeing Lana come back and we just get the Rusev Day joint. But that's pretty much our show for today because we'll go on forever with this. Are you going to watch the Mixed Match Challenge on Facebook Live?
Dog, I'm not watching it live. If it still sits there on Facebook and I can go back and watch it, sure. But I'm not going to be like, oh, I got to come and watch the Mixed Match Challenge. However, I am interested to see who wins because now that The Miz is with Asuka, I'm a little curious now.
Well, Miz has to take the pin.
Of course he does. But I don't know who's winning this thing.
So Braun Strowman is going to win.
Who's Braun Strowman with?
Alexa Bliss.
Alexa's going to take the pin.
Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
I'll tell you who's not going to win. Apollo Crews and Nia Jax.
Yeah.
Goldust is with someone horrible, too.
Yeah, Goldust is with Alicia Fox.
Oh, yeah. They're going out early.
So, yeah, early. I mean, I'm not watching the whole thing, but I'm going to watch it. I'll be entertained. I'd like to see what they do. I think it's a great idea. I really do. I think WWE has a great idea with this.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. I mean, it's Facebook Live. Why not, right? Right. Don't put too much time into it. Just have it be fun. Go into social media. Build it that way. Like, cool. Just no spots, one-off matches. Now, this is what they should have done real quick before we end the show. This is what they should have done with the UK title.
Yeah,
is
you're right.
Just have them be on the indies in the UK defending the belt and just have it as a Facebook Live show. And just do that. And then, you know what? You build it through Facebook Live and then give them the title spot on NXT. Takeovers. And that's it. But you keep the guys around. You keep it fresh. So they have to learn how to kind of use that. Maybe this will open their eyes to that and getting talent on there. But that's our show for today. We talked a ton of wrestling. Touch on other combat sports. I was sick. Next week, we're going to come through, preview a lot of stuff. I'll get a guest coming through the show again, and we'll get it rolling, man. It's nice to sit down. It's a Thursday. Let me go relax and enjoy my first day this week without the flu. So you go do your thing. Congrats on the Bleacher Report gig, by the way. Great job covering wrestling. Great platform. Can't wait to see the content you guys do.
Yeah, I'm curious. We'll see how much they let me run wild.
I'm sure you've never had that problem at a publication. They don't even know what just happened. You just look at them like, oh, y'all done fucked up now. But yo, that's our show for this week. Make sure you guys follow us on social media at The Corner LSN on all platforms. Me at Kel Dansby, him at Andreas Hale. We'll be back next week. Thank you guys for listening. We're out.
Peace.